We were born to survive, not to succeed. But once you start learning, you start diving down these rabbit holes. And if you're dying for knowledge all the time, like me, you'll inevitably come across a better mousetrap. And multifamily was that better mousetrap.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon, and we've got a really, really fascinating guest on today, Chris Roberts. He is the co-founder and CEO of Sterling Rhino Capital. He's been an entrepreneur for a long time. He started his real estate investing journey about 12 years ago, doing land deals, fix and flips, and then he slowly scaled into duplexes, triplexes, and then he's been doing multifamily syndication for quite a while. He's got about $150 million in assets under management for the syndication side. And then over the last few years, he's been doing new development. So he's got about $500 to $700 million in development deals going on as we speak. Some are kind of in the build phase. Some are just kind of starting to break ground. And then we also dive into a capital raising platform called Tycoon Invest. That's very fascinating. It's a crowdfunding type platform for syndicators, but also could be applicable to startup investors and things like that. So stick around for the episode and let's welcome in Chris. Chris, hey man, thanks for being on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Justin. Grateful to be here.
No worries. Glad to have you on. I was on your podcast a few months ago, maybe last year. No, I'm happy to have you on mine and maybe start out, give everybody like a little bit of an intro on you and a little bit about your real estate journey.
Sure. Well, I've been an entrepreneur for a little over 20 years, was in corporate America for a long time and had a successful sales and marketing career and started getting into land, single families, fix and flips, things of that sort, maybe, I don't know, 12, 15 years ago or so. And in order for me to leave corporate America, I had to scale. So I started looking into options and I worked my way into duplexes and then bought my first multifamily property. I built a syndication business, which is basically bringing a bunch of partners together and then limited partners to invest. And from there, we started growing pretty exponentially. We did, I think, 12 deals in about 3 years and grew to about $150 million. Now we have approximately another $500 to $700 million in new development under construction. So we started in the value add class C projects, 100 plus units, and then went into development. And from there, found the number one constraint with doing that and scaling was raising money. Yep. So we built a really good model for that and then started this company, Tycoon Invest, to help other syndicators raise money as well. So quite a journey, exited corporate America, retired pretty much financially free from corporate America in my early 40s. And now just share a lot of information with people and write books and do all kinds of fun stuff. So it's great.
Awesome. There's a lot to unpack in all of that stuff. So I want to kind of start in the beginning. You said you're working in corporate America. Were you doing the flipping and fixing and the land stuff as an active investor when you were in corporate America, like still working your W-2?
Absolutely. But if anyone tells you like, oh, you can sign up for a program and you can do a property with no money, that's BS in my opinion. Of course, where there's a will, there's a way. But for me, I was working literally 50, 60 hours a week sometimes in corporate America. I was an independent contractor, but it was a highly demanding job. And then I would literally connect my trailer to the back of my SUV. And after I'd go call on accounts for the day, I would drive out to my rental property before it was rental. I'd renovate, swing hammers, do the thing. And I did that for 6 weeks a pop each time. And then I put on the market, rent it for a few years, eventually sell it for a profit. And the whole Burr method, I learned throughout the years. That's what I did. I mean, it was basically two full-time jobs for years and years, but it paid off massively.
I guess, what was the mindset and when did you start that journey? Because, you know, there's a lot of people, and I can add myself in this, where I had a light bulb moment where I read a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I was like, okay, I need to change my life, change my mindset, change what I'm doing. Like, was it a point in time or like, how did you kind of start that journey?
Well, I think my strong mentality and work ethic started long before real estate. And it was that I've got to win. I've got to keep my job. Someone's trying to take it from me. I don't want to stand in a food line kind of thing. Like when I was younger, I struggled. So that was instilled in me very early. So when I found real estate, the light bulb went off. It was a buddy of mine. We had dinner and he was just sharing ideas with me. I was in the stock market and things of that sort. When the seed was planted, I already had the work ethic and mindset. It was a matter of how can I scale this? And it started with the single families and then obviously went up into door counts, right? Multifamily. Yeah. But the work ethic was there. The light bulb moment was, wow, there's this opportunity to really grow my wealth faster in real estate than the stock market. And then multifamily was the natural progression to scale from single family. I started out actually buying vacant parcels of land at the coast, and that was okay. But then, as you know, in single family, every time you sell something or even land, you pay these capital gains and you're constantly trying to shuffle the shells. Whereas with larger scale multifamily, you can take advantage of all kinds of things like accelerated depreciation and others. But yeah, so the mindset was there. It was a matter of just scaling and just reading books and educating myself.
I guess I talked to some people that they skipped over single family. Like, I didn't do single family. I went to duplexes, mm-hmm. triplexes, and because I was afraid of the risk that I saw in single family, one unit, one tenant, if they leave, you're on the hook for the whole mortgage, right? So I guess looking back, you just weren't ready to do multis, or you just thought like, okay, this is kind of just a natural progression, because that's what a lot of people do, right? They start in single family, they do some fix and flips, they realize, you know, that's not a super repeatable, scalable process, and then they get into syndication and all that.
This is a great question. And I think it goes back to our human nature, which is like, Tony Robbins said this once, I loved it. It was like, we were born to survive, not to succeed, right? So when someone gives you something, you go, oh, wow, okay, real estate investing can make more money than the stock market. That sounds great. Let's go, right? You don't think, well, wait a minute, why wouldn't I buy a multifamily apartment complex? Like, for me, I started educating myself in the real estate space, and I was building spreadsheets before BiggerPockets even had them on their website, right, for this type of thing, right? But once you start learning, you start diving down these rabbit holes. And if you're dying for knowledge all the time, like me, I'm always educating myself, you'll inevitably come across a better mousetrap. And multifamily was that better mousetrap. Now, had I found that 15, 20 years ago, it would have been a no-brainer. Yeah. But it just seemed so far out of reach when I first heard it even. And I thought, well, I'm going to dig in a little more. And so it's no different than opening up a coffee shop versus opening up 30 at once. If right. you had the equity, you'd open up 30 at once, because you'd know in that scale, you offset a lot of your risk and you can grow and become wealthy, right? So it's just knowledge is power when applied correctly, right? More knowledge you have and apply, you can rock and roll. So,
yeah, I want to dig into kind of the mindset piece, because I was afraid of getting into too big of things, right? Too early. But then, you know, I talked to some people that just jump right into it. And so when you started to scale from the single family fix and flip, at what point did you quit your full-time job, or did you start that process of, okay, I want to get enough passive income or enough money in the bank so I feel comfortable that I've got this financial foundation to then jump out and do my own thing full-time?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a great question. I like it, because once I found multifamily, I set my expectations high. I said, okay, I'm going to knock out, my first deal is going to be 100 units. I want to raise $1 million and I want to get a deal under contract in the next 3 months. Those are my goals from the first big convention I went to. And we did it. We nailed all three of those goals, which now looking back was like, seemed crazy at the time, right? So there was that. I had this mindset of, I am going to scale quickly, and I didn't look back. I think a lot of us, when we first start, we have these limiting beliefs, right? Oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. But if you have a mindset, I'm not going to do it on my own, I'm going to try to build a team around me, then you will get there eventually. The way I did it though was, early on, I brought a partner on, right? I said, hey, you have skills I don't have. Why don't you jump in? Well, very quickly after we became a partnership, he burned the boats. Like, he left within, I think, 4 to 6 months of us partnering, left corporate America, very, very good paying job. That enabled me to stick in corporate America as an independent contractor. And then basically we paid him a lot of the profits to keep things rolling, got going. He built out the systems infrastructure, made him a co-founder, COO. And then I was able to exit corporate America just a few years later. It wasn't that I wasn't in a position to leave. I just figured, why leave right now when I'm bringing in the stable income? I'm bringing in the financials to secure debt, right? Because they want liquidity, they want net worth, they want all these things. And he's actually building up the systems as we got going. And then at some point I realized, okay, we're scaling. We have 8 people on our team. Now it's time to leave and start venturing into other things like our capital raising platform and new developments, right? So I probably couldn't have done that as early without him. But I had invested in single family units and owned a bunch of those, and also invested in about 4,000 units, apartment doors, while I was building my own business. That's outside my own syndication company.
Got it.
So I had built a 6-figure passive cash flow income by the time I left corporate America. And that was in 3 to 4 years.
And you were doing those investments passively. So these were other operators that, and that's the audience that typically listens to this show are people that are sitting in a W-2. They like their job, they make good money, but they want different options outside of just the 401k of their company and the stock market, right? And so they're looking at, okay, there's options to invest. Maybe they have thought about real estate and they think about, okay, well, I need to do single family. We don't want to dedicate the time to do it, right? So there are options, and that's passively investing in multifamily real estate. So I want to take a quick break, but then we can jump into kind of that passive investment option. We can dig into that a little bit more. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
Awesome. We are back with the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Chris Roberts. So before we jumped into the break, we were talking about kind of you were building this business kind of while you were doing your W-2, but you were also investing passively into other multifamily syndications. So maybe talk through kind of why you were putting money into passive investments instead of maybe doing more active stuff.
When I first learned about the multifamily space and investing passive, active, and all of that, I found for me, one of the sponsors I was talking to had mentioned, hey, to learn a little bit more, you might want to passively invest. And I thought, well, that's a great idea because one, my money's not making me as much money in the stock market. And two, I can follow along with their newsletters and things of that sort and learn a little bit. Now, did I learn as much as maybe I thought I would have? No, but it was definitely valuable. More so though, I had my money working a lot harder for me, right? Yeah. So for example, in the stock market, I made 7 to 8%. My multifamily investments net me over 25% pretty easily across the board. I mean, it's staggering, right? And so I converted a lot of my retirement funds into self-directed accounts that I can invest in multifamily and qualified retirement plans. So the passive investing was really important as a beginner, one, to learn, but also for me, make more money in my investments than they were in the stock market. And then as I got going, I realized like even things like you can't invest your own IRA money in your deals generally, right? Yep. There's rules and regulations. You want to talk to your own CPAs, but I found, well, then I'm going to invest it with other qualified sponsors, right? That I can learn from. And that worked out really well. So
yeah, you got to find those other people that you know, like, and trust that you trust that you can give them 50, 100, 200 grand and they're going to be a steward of that capital. Because, you know, when you invest in the stock market, you don't need the CEO of any, you know, name a public company out there. You can't go talk to them and say, hey, I think you should change this or that. You can with some multifamily stuff. So it's pretty, pretty interesting. And that's kind of how I started my multifamily journey. Was I wanted to invest passively because I had chased a shiny object for like 6 months. We bought the duplex and then we listened to Bigger Pockets, and every episode had somebody that was uber successful in some form or facet of real estate. And so my wife and I were like, oh, let's write letters. Let's do this. And then I kept coming back to syndication. And because I knew I wanted to focus on that as my kind of main mode, I said, okay, I need to invest passively so that I can talk. So I know the process so that when I start to raise capital or start to find my own deals, I can explain it to my investors and make them feel more comfortable with what the process is going to look like. So I want to shift gears a little bit because you have done a lot of the things in real estate. One thing that I find fascinating and haven't dabbled in yet is the kind of development side. So talk a little bit about kind of how you started in the actual development space and some of the projects that you're working on now.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said earlier, it's like, you don't know what you don't know yet, right? You just try things. And development used to scare the hell out of me. I used to think, oh, development, that's crazy. It's risky. There's no way. And until you find a developer that educates you and says, no, hold on a second. Here's some of the pros and cons to development and why you might want to look at it. I was fortunate to actually have a family friend who had been in the space for about 15 years building in New York. And then he moved to Denver and we just decided to join forces. I was running in parallel with the same type of business stuff he was doing. I was just doing single families, fix and flips and duplexes. Our progression was this: land, single family, new construction, single family, fix and flips, duplexes. Onto first building was 100+ unit multifamily deal. Right. And then we had several of those, right? The development came in when the economy slowed a little and interest rates started climbing. Well, let me digress a bit. A few years back, we invested with this same developer in one of his deals. It was an $85 million project out of Stamford, Connecticut. And we learned a little bit about the process, right? As sort of, well, as GPs, but also as passive investors. And we were learning. And then when he approached me and said, hey, why don't we join forces? I've got a bunch of land I'm looking to develop on. We dove in and looked at all the fundamentals and it made sense. The transition is this, though. If you're looking to get into the development space at any scale, you want a good developer. And in my opinion, you want to partner with that developer because you both have a vested interest in the success of the project. In my opinion, the way we structured it was a really good way to do it. And here's why. So we started a 506C fund. Then we started a 506CF fund on our Tycoon Invest site. We now own the company, right? But at the time, I didn't own the company. We invested, we raised money on the platform as a crowdfunding source. So we had two funds going at once, raising money for our developments. The reason we did that is because we could start 4 to 6 new development projects and then put money from each one of those buckets into each project as we broke ground. Now, here's what you want to know if you're looking to development. You need a good developer, someone you know, like, and trust with a track record, right? You want to understand that you need to prepare, whether you're a passive investor or an active GP investor, for the timelines, because it takes a little longer, right, to build the property, stabilize it and such. Your cash flow is probably not going to start until year three versus a regular syndication where day one to the first 12 months, but your overall returns could be greater than a traditional syndication based on the fact that this sponsor group is the developer, right, and the bucket of money going into the development. So you cut out a few of the middlemen. Not a guarantee. This is not an offering by any means, but just saying that some of the allure to getting into development, right? Yeah. And we loved it. We had the parcels of land, Denver, Phoenix, some key markets with growth. And it just made sense for us for right now. We're still shopping value add and we're selling some value add this year, but development is our space. We like it. And I think it's going to work out great.
Are you kind of putting the multifamily kind of acquisition side on hold as you get these developments up and running? And I'm curious kind of where you are in the, have you broken ground on these? Have you sold any of those? Like, you know, where are you at with some of the development?
Yeah, our first development is actually being stabilized now. We're probably at about 45% stabilized, and we're getting about 16 to 17% higher rents than Proforma when we first started the project. So great, that property is going to perform wonderfully. The other projects are breaking ground actually starting, I think, end of March. The first three are between March and June-ish, and then they stagger out, which is, again, great because it gives you some room and runway. The other cool thing is when you have these funds, you have lots of time to raise money. So you don't have the constraint, right? A 90-day constraint or whatever it is. It's all different timelines based on which product and how big the product is. But at this point, we have approvals on three of the 4 to 6 properties. We have approvals from the city. Permits are pretty much in hand and we're closing on the land now and securing loans and things like that. So.
And is your model for the development, are you going to own, stabilize, and then operate? Or are you going to own, stabilize, and then rent or sell off? What's the model, or is it kind of TBD based on, you know, how it's performing?
Yeah, it really depends. But the cool thing about development versus value add, which is what we specialized in for years, is with value add, you know, you have one model basically you can execute. You have to put money in, rents, right? Increase the income of the property. Whereas with development, you kind of know ahead of time, okay, we're going to build it. And based on inflation and the rents and growth projections and all of that, because we're building it, we have a little bit more margin in there. When it's finished, it's going to be worth more than we built it for, right? So you'll have people that will pre-approach you, or will approach you pre-construction even. Like right now, we have people try to buy our land for double what we put it under contract for because we have permits almost ready. So you have people that come in. And it's no different than the single family fix and flip business. There's different levels, right? There's flippers, there's wholesalers, on land and development, it's the same thing. There's probably 4 different levels that we could sell at. So we find that we will probably, based on the feedback we're getting from family offices and things of that sort, is we will probably pre-sell a few of these before they're even finished. And where some of these companies will come in and stabilize for you and take over, and some will stabilize ourselves and sell. That's a beautiful thing about the diversifying into multiple deals into one fund. You have a lot
and
of flexibility.
You've got multiple options as you go through the process, right? You're not just locked in one.
Exactly, right? No, or one market.
True. Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I guess, how do you think about, you know, we're recording this kind of mid-late February of 23, interest rates are high, inflation's high, you know, the economy is, you know, people talk about recession, all that fun stuff. What is your kind of crystal ball? And obviously, you're not going to predict the future or anything like that. But what are you seeing, you know, as far as kind of 2023? Are you still, if you found some multifamily deals, would you be a buyer in this market? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, great question. And I think it's subjective, right? Everyone has to find their comfort zone. And when I talk to people, they'll tell me at events year after year after year, yeah, I haven't done my first deal yet. I haven't done my first deal. And it's like, why not? Right? There's something holding them back. And it could be the economy. It could be their own mindset, family, friends, who knows? And what I always tell people is like, look, you're not going to control interest rates. You're not going to control the economy. But what you can look at is historical data, 30 to 40 years of history of multifamily and investing in real estate and all that. It really is staggering. It's something that not a lot of people talk about. But when you look at historical data, and unless you're telling me that like there is a, God forbid, a nuclear war coming, or like Denver is going out of business or something, like what's going to happen that's going to be so catastrophic? Well, here's what will happen. You have to prepare yourself with a little extra equity. You have to raise some extra money. You have to set the level of expectation for the investors. And as an investor, you have to be realistic and say, okay, I'm getting into a property that's a marathon, right? No matter what you invest in, it's not day to day. It's a marathon, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, whatever it may be. And you have to kind of prepare yourself for that. And so specifically, how do I see the future? Well, first of all, interest rates will probably keep climbing for a little while. You can purchase cap. We have caps on some of our existing value add, which means your risk is limited, right? You're going to, interest rates will go, your payments will increase a little, but you're going to be capped and you'll get subsidies from that cap company that will help you pay the difference, right? So that's good. We build into our underwriting an average. So for example, construction debt will be a little bit higher, but it's a percentage of the overall value of the business, right? So when it's all said and done and we stabilize, we know based on historical trends, by the time we get out of these properties construction phase, we'll probably have lower interest rates based on historical trends, right? Over a 50-year average, interest rates were somewhere around 7.5% in real estate, right? Like we just flat out interest rates. So you go, okay, well, that's average through like 30 recessions. I'm being facetious here, but a lot of recessions, right? So you know, if you look at that and say, well, okay, we're at like 4 or 5 the last 15 years. Sometimes they spike to 6, 7, 8. What's the chance of them going to 10? Not very likely. We're not in a crazy situation as an economy right now. It's a little scary, but it's not that big a deal, really, if you look at it, the fundamental. We should be fine. So I don't focus on so much, what are we going to do if interest rates go to 9%? I say they're probably going to 9%, but they're not going to be there long. So how do we offset our risk? We just average things out, be conservative, and raise a little extra money, knowing that we're going to be in these deals 5 to 7 years. And it's very likely based on historical data and economic trends that we'll be perfectly fine. Just can't get caught up the little details in the news that you hear, right?
Yeah, it's a very reactionary environment when you hear all these, you know, interests are up, you know, super high and all that fun stuff. My wife and I just bought a house in Austin, Texas in July. And you know, our interest rate's pretty high, but we really like the house and we can afford it. Yeah, so you buy the property or you marry the property, you date the rate, right? So, you know, it's a matter that rates are going to, you know, fluctuate.
And Justin, just to clarify too, don't get me wrong. When you're going to buy a property at say 7% today, it makes it harder. A property, right? Let's say you're buying a value add because your debt coverage ratios are off. Like you have to buy caps. You have to do all these things a lender's going to require of you. So it does become difficult unless you have a lot of money down, right? Lower leverage with the bank and you can get an adjustable rate that makes sense. So it is harder, which is why we shifted slightly out of value add because it's harder to find deals, even though we get off market deals. Quotations, right? No, off market. We do get those off market deals, but they're just not going to yield the returns we expect for our investors right now, right? It doesn't mean they're not out there. So we're just kind of, we like the new development space, but we're still shopping value. Yeah, I mean, we look, we get deals.
No, that's awesome.
Well, we get perceived deals thrown our way.
Yeah,
sorry.
I love the word, everything that comes out is a deal, right? And it's like, maybe it is for somebody. Somebody buys them, right? Eventually.
Yeah.
So it is a deal for somebody. So I want to talk a little about Tycoon Invest. So you kind of mentioned it a few times. So maybe just break down what it is and I guess, who is it for? Like, what are the benefits? Yeah, let's just talk a little about that.
Yeah. I'll keep it short and sweet. Basically, Tycoon Invest was a solution to a problem I had as a syndicator, as a sponsor group. And that was time constraints with raising money, right? It's often said, if you find a deal, you can find money for it. But that, in my opinion, isn't true based on my experience. I mean, it's hard. If you can raise money, though, you can pretty much do anything, right? You can get in on other people's deals. You can invest that money. You can become a debt service fund, right? You can do all these great things. I use this company to raise money for one of my deals. And they have a larger database, but most of it was just my database that was investing through a vehicle that allowed me, per the SEC, legally, if you will, to go out to the public, to non-accredited and accredited investors. So I used them and found that the company worked really well for what I needed. Original founder of the company was kind of a software backend guy and just didn't really have, let's say in his words, the skill set to grow the company to the level he wanted. So he approached me and asked me if I'd be interested in acquiring the company. And after some back and forth, I did. And it, because it solved my own problem and it solves a lot of my friends' problems, right? So what Tycoon is it's just a crowdfunding platform that allows syndicators to put their deals on the platform and raise money to offer debt for other deals, raise money in a convertible note, raise money, let's say a Reg A if they wanted to, or a 506B or C or like whatever they want to do it. It gives you lots of flexibility. So in a perfect world, new syndicators coming to us, just like I was, and says, hey, I need to raise $5 million. I want to go out to the public and advertise to everybody. I want to list my offering. Of course, there's minimums. You got to qualify and all that stuff. It's not a big deal. That's what Tycoon Invest is a crowdfunding platform that gives a lot of flexibility to syndicators. And it's been just amazing.
And so is it like, what's the similarities or differences with like Fundrise and some of these other like larger crowdfunding platforms out there?
Several differences. One, many of the companies that, let's say a syndicator wants to go, and I'm going to call them syndicators, but sponsor groups or whatever. If they want to go and list their deal, they might have to have 10 years experience just to get on there. They might have to have $500 million worth of assets, right? There's very high bar bar threshold to get through to list there, right? Others are just platforms where you list your deal. They're not an actual raising platform where you just put your deal up there and they send you referrals from their base. Well, that's not the same. This is actually a platform where we kind of allow you to list your offering and then allow those investors to come and invest right through our platform to meet all the SEC rules. And then we transfer over the list of investors and the funds to you when you're ready to then go fund your deal. Plus, you have up to 12 months to raise on our platform versus 30, 60, 90 days in a deal.
Got it.
Right?
You can create a fund on the platform in advance of a deal. And then even if you don't get a deal, let's say you anticipate a deal and something happens, it falls through, you could then probably transfer some of that fund to then investing in other people's deals that maybe aren't yours.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You have a lot of people that raise money for deals. That's their specialty, but they have to have responsibility. So they own some ownership and they do some management in the deal or whatever, but they're always raising because they don't know, you know, when the next deal is coming from, let's say the two sponsor groups you're working with. This is a perfect bucket for that, because if you have $2 or $3 million going and your PPM, your legal documents state that you can invest in these types of deals, so you had a sample deal up there. Well, now you dump $1.5 million into this deal and $1.5 million into this deal and you're off and running, right? Just flexibility. Plus, it gives the passive investor flexibility, because if they know, like, and trust Justin and his company, well, they're going to want to stick with you. And now you have all this time and energy put into a fund that gives you flexibility versus one deal. Man, it's a rat race, right? You got so much time to get into that thing, right? You know, we've done it.
So. Yeah, it's a rat race for the raiser, but it's also, there's some urgency for the passive investor. I've done raised deals early last year, late 21, where they funded in 3 days, right? So you may be wanting to send this out to your investor base and they're like, hey, let me think about it over the weekend. You call them on Monday. They're like, hey, dude, sorry, it's full, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's others that are like, okay, it's, you know, you're down to the closing date and you're trying to fund it and it's a little bit hairy. So.
Absolutely.
That's super interesting. And so I guess this is a platform for kind of any kind of syndicator that wants to kind of think about instead of doing deal by deal syndications or deal by deal raises, you can create a fund on your platform and have a little bit more flexibility for your investors, but also for yourself and be able to kind of spread that over a couple of deals.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just it's a place for people to go. We'll limit it to a handful of specialists. So maybe like a handful of syndicators, a handful of storage unit type folks. And maybe we have a few people outside real estate that want to jump on and do some things.
Cool.
But for the most part, it solved a problem I had. And I know it's solving problems for friends of mine that are in the business too, which is what's cool about it. And it has a lower barrier of entry than some of these big, big companies that you named.
So, yeah. No, that's interesting. I want to kind of ask you a question and kind of put your I'm a W-2 worker hat on. Think about, like, you know, obviously the audience, a lot of people listen to the show are sitting in a W-2. Maybe they're listening to it on their commute to work. And they want to have other options. I guess, what do you think is a really good first step for somebody that has thought about real estate as an option? And maybe they're in the analysis paralysis phase because they see people doing single family houses. They see people doing, you know, passive investing. They see people doing other things. Like, what's a good first step to kind of narrow their focus and maybe kind of start their investing journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it goes back to like that desire. You know, you have to figure out in your own life, like, what is it that I want? And it's not necessarily money. Maybe it's freedom for your family. It's, you know, health. You got an ailing, you know, family member or something. You have to figure out, like, why am I doing this? Why am I wanting to diversify, learn, make my money work hard for me? Because a lot of people just mill through life without really any purpose, to be honest with you. I talk to a lot of people. It's like, what's your goals? What do you want out of life? You know, oh, I want to retire early. Okay, why? What are you going to do when you retire early? You got to kind of find that first. And when you figure that out, that's what's going to sort of drive you to educate yourself, because you almost have to force yourself or be forced to learn more about investing. Get this, Justin, literally the average person in America spends less than 20 minutes a week on their finances. Okay. Less than 20 minutes a week. I mean, it's staggering, right? Yeah. I spend hours and hours and hours in syndications, finances, educating myself on investing, like all kinds of stuff, because I'm curious. So start with that, my why, if you will, or whatever. And once you figure that out, then you just start educating yourself in different spaces. So you might learn more about storage units, multifamily, you know, mobile home parks, REITs, things of that sort. For me, I found that multifamily investing was the best place for me to put my money, and it's paid off massively for me, but that may not be for everyone. Then you want to get on podcasts like this. Like, we have a podcast geared for investors, right? Just to educate our investors. It's not really so much for people to come on and sponsor things. It's just to educate people, because we found there was a lot of questions investors were asking. Facebook, YouTube is a great one. We get a lot of people on YouTube that are like, I saw a video on this and I want to reach out to you. So I encourage people just to continue learning and then find that sponsor group, right, that you really resonate with and you like once you talk with them. And then just dip your toe in, man, and go. Some companies will let you invest for as little as $1,000. Some are $100,000 minimum. Some are accredited, $1 million in net worth, et cetera. and some are non-accredited. You got to figure that out.
Yeah, I think it goes back to knowledge and then also finding those. If you definitely want to passively invest, you've got to find the people that are active investors and syndicators that are, you know, you can build that, whether they're, you know, family members or whatever that you know, like, and trust, because you're betting on them to either, if they're the operator, to operate a good property, or if they're, you know, a capital raiser, investor relations person, you're betting on them to know good operators, right? So there could be a couple layers away from a deal that's active. So I appreciate that context. So I want to move kind of to the final phase. I've got kind of a three-pack of questions that I ask everybody that comes on the pod. So we'll jump right into this. So what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you on your real estate investing journey?
Yeah, I would say, most of all, don't for a second believe that you can't do anything. And I know that's cliche, it sounds crazy, but I would look at, like, wealthy people when I was younger and think, oh man, I could never have a car like that, or I could never have a house like that. When I was younger, it was about money, right? Until I grew up and got mature. But those limiting beliefs do carry you through, right? Because they become habits. Those limiting beliefs become habits. If you want to have $1 million in your bank account to retire with $60,000 a year in passive cash flow, believe that, tell yourself that every day, and then go educate yourself on how you're going to get there. Now, passive investments could get you there eventually, right? Or it could be something else. It could be starting a business. But for me, it was, I want to get to freedom. Freedom was exiting corporate America. To do that, I needed to scale. In order to scale, I needed multiple streams of income. So I started out with a piece of land was one, a single family was another, et cetera, et cetera. That's what I would focus on.
Yeah. Stack it on top. It keeps stacking, stacking the assets. So yeah, no, it's perfect. So what's your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Yeah. So I listen to, I don't know, maybe 4 to 6 books a month minimum, and a lot of podcasts. There's one called, was it The Good Life that I listened to recently? There's another one called Influencer. I can't remember the authors, to be honest with you. But my favorite books, though, in real estate are Millionaire Mastermind and Millionaire Real Estate Investor. Obviously, The Rich Dad, Poor Dads, and all of those sorts. But one last quick thing, and I know it's a lot of books, but this is important. Number one most important book of all time for me about all of this was How to Win Friends and Influence People and 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Those two books set the foundation for the right mindset. And the rest was just filling in the blanks. So just as your listeners are thinking about books, get your mind right. Those two books are amazing for foundational growth.
No, that's great. I appreciate that. And we'll add some of these in the show notes for sure. So this is going to be an interesting one, because you kind of, I think you maybe already have hit it. So if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you can live an amazing life off of just your passive income, what would you do?
I love this question. One of the things I talk to people a lot is, okay, so you want to retire. What are you going to do when you retire? Because if you talk to a lot of retirees, they're bored out of their mind, and a lot of them go back to work. So for me personally, it was, as soon as I hit the financial freedom number, I can exit corporate America and I can focus more on my family, my friends, my health, my life, and actually helping others, right? And a lot of people say that, but I mean, helping others like this, you're educating people, right? You're having fun. You're enjoying what you do. I'm not done. I'm just starting what I call my second life. My second life is doing the things I love. My stress levels, Justin, since I left corporate America, they are 30% of what they were. I mean, I can't explain the pressure that comes off your chest when you're doing your own thing, truly. And then you're really helping people. Like, I'm going to be on a TEDx stage this year. I mean, I'm writing books. I'm doing all, it'll be my third book coming out in May, right? Nice. So a lot of really fun things. So that's my vision for retirement, was build enough money to actually build my second life and do the things I love, which in my mind is real estate, syndications, educating people, giving information away, and speaking at schools. I just love it. And you got to have that in your mind, because when you retire, you're not going to just sit on a beach. Believe me, you'll be bored.
It's a different level of stress when you leave corporate America. You know, being an entrepreneur myself, it's like, but it's, you literally get out of it what you put into it, right? So if you are, I'd rather work 80 hours for myself than 40 hours for somebody else, right? Because it's not, you know, working a W-2 job is not super secure, no matter what anybody says. Being in recruiting, I've seen it. But yeah, no, I really appreciate it and really appreciate you being on the podcast for sure. How can people kind of get in touch? And it sounds like you're writing a book, so we can kind of add some of this stuff in the show notes too, but how can people get in touch if they want to reach out?
Yeah, I would say just go to our 2 websites, which is sterlingrhinocapital.com. We give away a lot of free information just to learn. We don't have mentor programs or anything. So sterlingrhinocapital.com and then tycooninvest.com. And those are places you can learn more about us. You can get in there. You can reach out to us. We got a ton of social links to go to YouTube, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. But just go to the 2 websites, start a dialogue with us if you want to learn more. And again, links to the books and all that stuff, media, are all over the websites.
Awesome. Chris, man, really appreciate you being on. This was a lot of fun. I like that I can repay the favor of having you on my podcast when I was on yours early on in my journey. So man, really appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks, Justin. I appreciate it. And it's awesome to see you and the success you've had and come a long way from when we first met, and excited to see what's next for you. So thank you so much for having me. I hope your listeners got a little value out of this conversation.
I definitely think I do. And I do hope everybody took something away from this episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. And remember, you don't have to quit your career to build a passive real estate portfolio that will provide you with multiple streams of passive income. You just need to take some action, and listening to this podcast is a great first step. So Chris, man, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.